Well, welcome. I see that we have a couple of early birds. I hope you guys are doing great. Are there things that you would like to discuss or ask or just reflect on while others are signing on? Any lingering questions from what we've talked about in the first couple of seminars?
Hey, Dave, this is Rob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Great, yeah. Where are you calling from, Rob?
I'm in Florida.
Ah, okay. Super. What you got, my man?
The last session, we got into what I think, and I know there'll probably be more about this, but what I think, well, let me say, I'm a coach. I've been coaching for almost 10 years now, and what I found is this issue around willingness to and ability to change and transition is very hard for people, and they think they're ready for it, and you sign them up for coaching, and you kind of get into the process, and I know you touched on the states of mind and everything like that, but I don't know, anything you think you could, for qualifying people maybe a little bit beforehand, or signs to look for somebody who's, you know, not ready or not really ready for coaching and change.
Okay, that's a great question, because you've just described the scientific term as human beings. None of us are really wanting to embrace change. We would rather avoid it and, you know, go have a salad by the pool or a hot dog, depending on. But our minds and brains are designed to keep doing what we do. Whenever we repeat something, our brain hardwires it, if we do it enough, to make it easy, to make it less energy so that we can devote things to something else. Anytime any of us begins, just think about, anytime any of us has begun anything that's new or different, we don't know how it's going to turn out. There's a certain trepidation and uncertainty, maybe even anxiety. Now, the first thing I think that's important is not to think about it as talent. Talent is highly overrated. With deliberate practice, basically, people can do whatever they decide to do, unless it's, you know, for me deciding that I'm going to, you know, make a comeback for the Olympic basketball team. If it's reasonable, you can dedicate practice, and that will evolve over time to optimizing performance. So if you regard it, or have a client regarding it as talent, that's a limited mindset, because that's like calling something that you're creating a noun, as if, well, you know, my doubt stopped me, or my anxiety paralyzed me. It's as if what you create is now suddenly seen as external and sufficient reason not to proceed. So the best thing I think that we can do is to resonate with someone first. Remember, state comes before strategy and story, to resonate with their experience so that they're not doing it alone. You have an empathic resonance. You've entered the circle of that person so that you collaboratively can move ahead. That's the one thing that's different, as you know, in your decade of coaching, that's unique to coaching from all the other professions, all the other professions that work on a consultancy model. You go, you present a problem or an issue, the expert tells you what to do, and that doesn't work. We've talked about that and a couple of examples of that early on. What we do differently is to engage in a collaborative relationship, to look together at creating a strategy. Now, the first thing may be to look at the read of the experience. The brain, as we've talked before, doesn't know the difference. It registers exactly the same for anxiety and excitement. Now, if you read it as anxiety, that's likely to boot up an old model where danger is there, you better head for cover, and it makes sense to stop. If you create a current context in a collaborative way of resonating with the uncertainty, but of reading it as excitement, of asking, is it a little bit different? How do you experience that as opposed to something that's been a clear danger or clear anxiety? Well, it feels a little bit how. Well, there's an excitement there, but then, you know, that's the sliver of sunlight that you need, because that experience you've resonated with is the possibility of reading that experience as excitement. And write down, everybody write down this equation. Belief drives behavior. Behavior drives performance. You just need three words and an arrow to the right between the first and second and the second and third. The belief is the software that creates our perception and then our processing of things, and thus our behavior, and our behavior determines our performance. So if your client is not performing as he or she might want, then you look at the antecedent. What's the behavior? And if the behavior is not optimized for a particular task, or there's some compromise, then you look at the antecedent to that, the belief. Because the belief is what drives that behavior and ultimately that performance. Whenever you resonate with the inevitable, ubiquitous uncertainty, trepidation, and experience of what can be read as anxiety, everybody has that, and that's a reaction naturally to change, as we talked in our first seminar. And also, the brain contributes here to say, well, this is not what I expected. The error detection mechanism says, this is not right. And if you read that as if it's your intuition or as if it's a read of a situation to say, well, you know, I really feel like this is wrong too, be sure that it's an accurate read of the situation, of the excitement, of being totally present for the intuitive resonance with all the information possible, left and right brain, all the different states of mind, so that it can be a truly informed decision. And what that client needs more than anything are two things. One is your belief in that client. And remember, we talked about how we now know from neuroscience that belief can create a shift of a state of mind to be more synthetic, integrative, creative. It causes someone to respond in a different way. They'll teach you then why you believed in them. I'll tell you a very brief story. When both of my kids were very small, I told them that I would always believe everything they told me. Now, I knew that would put a little pressure on them, but that was okay. I mean, you know, they'll get over it. When my son left for college, this was still many years ago, when my son left for college, there was a note at the Father's Day, his last at home. Included was a passage that said, as best I can recall, he said, you know, when you said, I'll believe everything you tell me, that sounded kind of stupid at first, but then I realized that I would never lie to you, and I knew you would never lie to me. As I look back, that's a relationship I don't know anyone else that has. So it's a reverse truth. You know, the belief creates the experience. There are frontwards truths in science, but that's not one of them. That's a belief that creates the outcome. So you together, and that's the most powerful thing that you can give your client, is believing them. That's why I would never work with anyone in whom I don't believe. And then you can together, collaboratively move forward to focus on the system, not the outcome. And that's important. Whenever you want to break a habit, focus on the system, not the outcome, because the outcome can seem too big. You know, nobody ever sat down to write a novel, or, you know, nobody ever lost 20 pounds. You know, they may in the first week lose a pound. Maybe they do that for 19 weeks. They've had 19 weeks of successes. Otherwise, they've had 19 weeks of failure because they haven't gotten to 20 pounds yet. Focus on the system with them. That's one of the unique things that we know and do as coaches. Now, many words later, Rob, does that, what sense does that make to you in terms of your question? Is that helpful at all?
Well, yes, that was excellent. And I wished I had spoken to you 2 years ago when I was dealing with this client. It was challenging.
Listen, I wouldn't have listened to my earlier self either. So, hey, it's a process. And it, you can't just name it and make it happen or make it go away. It's a process, and that's where we're aligned with the best interest and the best purpose of the client. They know that we're there with them. We're in the trenches with them. We're going to be there no matter what. That may be one of the first, or if not the first, no matter what, that they've had. The first person who truly, unequivocally believes in them, even parents, even a spouse or partner, you know, you're 98%, but then there's always a little bit of self-interest. If you're 100% dedicated to the success of your client, no matter what, you'll co-create a totally new story with your client's point of reference and their story.
That's excellent, Dave. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for the question, the prompt there. Any other thoughts or questions? Well, I see the time, and I want to respect that. If there's anything that we don't cover in what I wanted to prepare for you, or what I've prepared for you, then I'll dictate it. I'll operate from the same outline that you do, and send it to you because I really value the interchange and the kinds of discussions. I much prefer a true seminar rather than me talking because I already agree with most of what I say. So I really value that and thank you. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode now. Okay, this is really more of an elaboration of the question in a more systematic way that Rob asked. Think about this. I was going to ask this before I went on lecture mode. What's the number one addiction we have as humans? Now think about it. The most common addiction that we have as humans. Most people are stuck because of the story they tell themselves or the story they operate in without ever becoming fully self-reflective or aware of that story. Problems are the biggest addiction we have. They give us an effective focus. They keep us in that same well-worn path in the snow. So here's a brief review and overview. Much of our behavioral and emotional responses are automatic. Neuroscientists estimate, as we've touched on before, 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. This means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, and attachment patterns, the shadow story operating system on unconscious autopilot. Our lives are filled with these script patterns of how we respond to situations, and we repeat certain patterns. Our brain wires those, as we do, to the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates without conscious thought, in large part, 90 to 95%. We don't have to think about it. A family gathering, a board meeting, going into a restaurant, you tend to sit at the same seat each time. We look at the menu, order the same thing. So let's look at a systematic way of understanding. Understanding the algorithms of brain patterns and the psychology of the mind software that influences them allows a systematic understanding to create strategies that work. The roadmap system that we're about to talk about, and this is in your outline, involves 7 steps to understand the algorithms of behavior, emotion, and attachment. It's a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personally constructed stories and how to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior, co-created with your client. The approaches to changing behavior that work, and this is important, consider what this is doing to your personal stories. So the final step facilitates the development of corresponding new identity to sustain the transformation. So, and what that means simply is that as we help someone evolve into a new story or a transition into a different story, we also need to help them revise the model of how and who they are, the bedrock of their identity, because that's the most common thing that happens in terms of behavior. You do something different, but you'll always return to your core identity. So, as coaches, we want to be sure that we address that identity, that operating system, the model of how and who we are evolves along with the changes that are made. And that's why it's the final step of the roadmap. The seven steps, the acronym, the roadmap. The P is program new identity. So let's look at the roadmap and use the example of career transition. So let's roadmap a career change and transition. Step one, and remember, you can do the roadmap for any story, wellness, money, life, relationship. We're going to apply it here to career story. So step one, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line. Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in your career story. Not talking about job function, but story, career story. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone has performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, I would say they don't have the information needed to make a decision. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career in order to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career, because you know they're going to anticipate that, and we idealize what we don't yet have. It's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling at 80% would be repeated in the new situation. After all, they have the same operating system. So a question here. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? Amazingly, any client I've ever asked this can immediately say 85%, 70%, 75%. They immediately know the answer. It's not like they have to think about it. I'm always surprised, and shouldn't be, but they immediately know. So if it's not 100%, that's your immediate coachable moment. Let's understand that remaining, whatever it is, 20%, and how your choice architecture creates it, how you're creating that story. So, have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so you can make an informed decision? Here's a brief story to illustrate. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time when I was on the faculty at Baylor College of Medicine, I served as consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research, working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as a result of an accident. So, not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime of disability. So instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves or try to treat a depression, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could consider controlling something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. And they heartily agreed with me. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control something, one thing in their lives, to know they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice, and they did not need me to suddenly come in and say that was a lousy choice and let's take that off the table. I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, recognizing that it was at a different level since the onset of their new physical challenge. Only achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision. Now, thank God nobody ever made that decision. I worked with several hundred people over a period of 5 years. No one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new and different evolved level of functioning, their full capacity. Step two, own your career story, especially your needs and ideals, because they govern the strategies and the goals that you have. Be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with passion and experience. When your passion and expertise combine with needs and ideals, wonderful possibilities emerge. So, a question here. What do you want in your career? Now, listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something, or rarely both. Distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. And be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, someone may need to realign or need to recommit to a career. And keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if someone chose the wrong career then. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, even though she was immensely successful, but was addicted to the pursuit of perfection, to her work ethic. More had become a goal, more money, more work, and by definition, like perfect, more does not have an endpoint. The story of the pursuit of money had become a substitute for other stories. It was at least the way that she could have a metric to see the more in some ways. The ideal of more lacked an endpoint, so she never got to the place of self-esteem, because the only place that I know that self-esteem comes from is from having an internal ideal that's attainable and living up to it. She had become exhausted with a perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet never quite getting there. And I'm going to return to her in a moment, so hold that client in mind. Step three, assess your career story. Now, as we've talked before, a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in your brain. It's a physical part of a neuronal network. So you just can't present a simple explanation or a better idea and expect that suddenly it's going to override what's there in your client's mind. Ron, as you know, repeatedly now. But change can occur as a process, not an event. It's an inside job. This step, assessing a career story, is to assess the beliefs to see if they're limiting, maybe to try out different ways of looking at things, other beliefs. You know, the simplest way to say what we do in coaching, if it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. That applies to limiting beliefs. So what's another way to look at this? How might your thoughts be limiting you? Who might have a different perspective on this? Are there questions you're afraid to ask? What do you really want? What do you need to let go of? What's present and what's missing in a current career is the focus here. What information do you need? It may be researching new information about personal skills, abilities, aptitudes that need to evolve. That may be the level of change that is creating a stalemate or a dissatisfaction. So, questions here. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What's it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? Distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness can often and easily be blamed on a job, just like a marriage. People want to change the obvious external cause rather than to look inside. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles, just like marital struggles, to external unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or pose a recognizable remedy. Then you got a geographic cure that's possible for a little while at least, so you leave it. Step four, decide on a plan and how to make it work. Align needs and ideals with purpose and passion focused on a goal. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be different than what you've done for three or more decades. It means that you'll examine again your fundamental strengths, your needs, and your ideals. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized. No corporate structure or job to fit into and govern your day. You're looking at a blank page for your schedule for the first time. You'll need to cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others, and especially where you can make the greatest contribution. Like your life and other stories, your daily structure is not there till you create it. So, how would working with me as a mentor coach get you to where you want to be? Now, I want to return to the client who was pursuing perfection. Her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it or feeling fulfilled. She had more patients than she could handle. She had more money than she could spend, but she was only looking to the next task to do it perfectly. I highlighted a pattern that I noticed. It seemed that as soon as she began to really enjoy her work, really feel immersed in it and the flow of it, she began procrastinating. She would put off completing work, which restored immediately her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. When I pointed out this pattern, she immediately recognized it. It prompted her inside. She said, you know, since I was a girl, work always needed to be work. My dad always wanted to see me working when he came in the room. The minute I began to feel any pleasure at what I was doing, I would begin to feel vaguely guilty, like I should be working. So, create a vision. Create a vision of success at your specific goals. Include all the sensory detail, all the experiences of successfully arriving at your goal. Review it twice a day. Having a plan supersedes motivation and not feeling like doing something. You don't need motivation. In fact, that can be a way not to proceed, to wait for motivation. You don't need motivation. All you need are two things, to have a plan and to stick to it. Now, you need that plan to be including what the next step is so you know where to begin. So then sometimes that's what looks like resistance with a client, is they don't know what the next step is. Step five. Map a new story. Where, when, and how to begin. SMART goals, initiatives, next best action, and navigate with the brain's error detection mechanism. The human brain creates patterns of connections in our ongoing search for meaning. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. These patterns, these mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. So, discomfort and uncertainty began any significant journey, as we were talking about in the initial discussion. Our brains have an error detection mechanism located very close to the emotional center that says, this isn't normal when we try something new. So that adds to the uncertainty because we don't know how it's going to end. When our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic. then we notice if something doesn't fit a predicted pattern. And that can be a new way of doing things. The error detection mechanism in the brain compares input to what's already hardwired as expectation. A mismatch creates a disruption in the expected order of things. So doing something new and better is going to begin paradoxically with discomfort. The error detection mechanism explains a number of dynamic factors when you think about it. We notice differences more easily than confirmation, because this is what activates the brain, so it becomes easier to focus on the things we do wrong, and we struggle to list our strengths. If advice is unfamiliar or unwanted, including from the mentor coach, it sets off an error detection response, meaning that someone can reject an idea before they even consider it, placing another barrier to resist change. This is also why trying to fix it doesn't work. Plus, fixing is the most common thing that gets in the way of understanding to start with. But so telling a client what to do can trigger an error detection mechanism. Focus on problems energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. If you don't believe that, look at the 5 o'clock news. Bad news gets our attention for the same reason. The mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context and situation in our lives, such as stress in childhood, just may not apply in usual situations. But this hardwiring, even though automatic, is not permanent. It can be revised. That's why you need a system. That's one system that can do this is the roadmap system. It's exactly what we're talking about. Instead of having a goal, you know, everybody's got a goal, but to have a system is a way stepwise of understanding and deconstructing a story in order to systematically get there step by step. Choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. We are susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, short-sighted. When we consider how people think, we can design environments of choice that make it easier for people to pick better options. The options still have to be theirs. We're not ghostwriting a story, but we're helping them understand the story they're writing and looking at default choices in terms of, let's look at that and see in a conscious, specific way. Step 6, author changes. Implement the plan to reach the goal. Someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers may mean changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career, you just change the setting. Even if you go, and this is from an example, even if you go from the head of HR at one multinational oil company to another in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. The correct paradigm would be not only the process, but the content of the new career, as well as the process of change. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. An example, a personal example. In making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My secretary would take the calls and put patients on the schedule on the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drug me kicking and screaming into marketing. Until I finally, after I didn't need to kick and scream anymore, realized that that wasn't the way to do it anyhow. So the question, who else needs to be involved in your plan? This is about deliberate practice, getting coaches or mentors, people who can help you tweak and fine-tune and guide you. Step 7, this is the P, program new experiences to incorporate them into your identity. Both change and transition involves changing a core identity. Now, as you know, your identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself. what you automatically consider, if you're willing to do it, or what you'll do, or what you won't do. Identity is a set of beliefs that relate to who you are as a person, what you can do, what you will and won't do. When changes don't last, someone has not changed their identity to incorporate that behavior as part of who they are in the working model. When there is a shift in that working model, in identity, it becomes permanent. The strongest force in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our own identification of ourselves, our identity. It's not what I do, but who I am. That can be very powerful when it's an ally in our work as mentor coaches, just as the error detection mechanism can be an internal navigation to look at how to frame that in a way that can facilitate. So let's look at just some overview things that I wanted to put together. This is as good a place as any for these things that sort of fit together, but they're definite things I wanted to tell you. These are some principles related to career. Time is not an adequate measure of hard work. Hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. A work ethic is not the same as a productivity or success ethic. Remember my client, the physician who worked relentlessly until she began to recognize some of these things and revise the internal model. If possible, and this is from a very different perspective, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well. Time management is energy management. Stress regulation is energy management. Follow your passion. I told you, these are some things cobbled together. Know your optimum state of mind, your zone to accomplish a specific task. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get to that zone. When your passion and your expertise combine, deciding possibilities occur. Structure gives you freedom. If you're thinking about retiring or pausing for a new career, consider the retirement or the pause as the new career. What's its mission and purpose? What's the business plan? The difference your wisdom will make in this career. Finally, consider this possibility. When you reach a point in your life that you can celebrate the freedom to work rather than the freedom from work, that's success. Now, let's look a little bit more closely at this concept of operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded especially from parents in the first years of life become automatic, so they operate without observation or awareness. That's what I mentioned as the attachment patterns, the behavior patterns, the emotional patterns that comprise that 90 to 95% of our operating system. So here's a simple example. We can create two stories simultaneously that go in opposite directions, and this may be helpful to listen to with clients. The surface story: I want to make more money and create wealth. The shadow story, though, that ghostwrites behavior: I don't really believe I can make big money, or I don't think I have what it takes, or what if I do all this work and then I'm embarrassed? That, you know, so it makes each one of these a sufficient reason not to proceed. Another example: stated surface story: I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. The shadow story: well, I can't have total authority because my partner acts like I'm taking it away. Mentoring and mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to empathically be attuned to the mind and experience of a client, to help them develop mindfulness and self-awareness. So, considerations of a career. Did I want to conclude the roadmap discussion here? The considerations of a career need to be considered in conjunction with a larger framework, the developmental phases of the individual, where that individual is in a life pattern, as well as where that individual is developmentally in that career, beginning, middle, or end. Different issues in a career developmental pattern of beginning, middle, and end, different issues and different meanings of the same stimuli in our life development patterns. The developmental issues more in the foreground of a certain phase of life may determine how someone views a career, the challenges, or even the desire to change careers. So, some mentor coaching applications. Here's how we can translate that into mentor coaching. Challenge your mindset. For example, see every task as an improvable skill at how you can get better than getting it done. Approach work with new perspectives. Think more simply, more abstractly, deeper, more synthetically. Begin with look at it with a beginner's mind. This is part of what we do as mentor coaches, is we're catalysts to help someone look at things from different perspectives. Think long term, the place of your work in a system. And that is the antithesis of thinking of it as a job. Get feedback from other sources, multiple sources, including outside your field. Do these approaches consistently. It's what distinguishes super achievers. One consideration, a destination postcard. A picture or a scene from the not too distant future shows specifically what is possible. Remember two questions, the travel agent questions, and the same questions, the same ways your brain works. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? And then you program your brain to have long and short-term destinations. A destination postcard can also allow you to look back at what will I be glad I've done? What should I watch out for? What can I look at now that may be getting in the way? Remember, the reason we do anything is basically how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. And that can be helpful because, yeah, it's going to be nice to set out by the pool, but then tomorrow, the next day, next week, what will I be glad I've done? So, in terms of coaching, let's talk about engineering effectiveness. Some of the essentials of engineering effective change. Focus specifically on the next step. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope, a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He averaged 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was asked how he kept going when he was exhausted, knew he had thousands of miles ahead. His response, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. 2, specify the next step. Not abstract, not global. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. Save money is not a specific plan. Make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick or a map so you know where you are. What we do in coaching, each session, we construct a map. What would you like to focus on? Where would you like to get to? A map helps us together collectively, the client and you, determine where you are, where you want to go. You can measure progress along the way. You can tell what's detour and what's distraction. That can be a life plan. That can be a coaching session plan. Make progress measurable. A tangible focus on the next step and a specific destination demystifies a journey. Make progress visible. Small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible, and celebration of each small victory. One of the best examples of shrinking a task to a tangible next focus is Alcoholics Anonymous, challenging its members one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a manageable, foreseeable, specific action. that's what they can do. They can't determine what they're going to do tomorrow. You know, I have, you know, at dinner, I'll be talking with my wife and suggest something. You know, I've got this great place I'd like us to think about for dinner. And she'll say, Dave, let's do one meal at a time. And of course she's right, and it contributes to the enjoyment of our present meal. I learned well, but not quickly. All you ever have to do is the next right thing. This shrinks the change to immediate steps of effectiveness and the experience of momentum. So what we've just done is to adopt the scientific method to examine, measure, test, consider change, look at the results. To create a mindset of inquiry generates discomfort, always, but it can also catalyze growth. So I want to conclude with 12 AAA principles of change to author a transition story. The three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. One, this is in your outline. You're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly ask for each of these storylines for yourself right now. Is it working? And make that a yes or no. No explanation. This is not multiple choice. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Yes or no, is it working? Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. A not-so-secret to success is you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, each of those storylines takes the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as the belief of abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Simple math says when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. So here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. That's just the way things are. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. I mentioned the neuroscience and law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? First two questions. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Brain does the same thing. Goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, you make a map, and you determine the time. A caveat here. To know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's analogous to anger being as passionate an attachment as love. If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific, measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, you've probably heard of this. George Valiant is a colleague of mine, and I met with him and talked with him. They studied people for 5 decades and found that the 10 to 15% who had goals 5 decades later, they had 90% of the assets of the entire group. That was an ancillary finding. Most of it was about wellness. But motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by the Boston Marathon in April. Here's a good idea. I want to save money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of X money to my retirement fund the first day of each month from now on. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, or move you to a higher level, quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, substitute your own goals there. Then reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up, when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Just go to the next telephone pole. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. People have known this for centuries. Good parents see this, have seen this for centuries. Sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old one. You can't just add something like adding a health club membership. You have to disrupt the pattern that's there, then create a new pattern. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or partner, ask on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that could destroy the social net of their Thai community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all the things that that person has done right in life, good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on this behavior by looking at the positive has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself or herself. That person remembers who they are and why they're important to the life of the village. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, you can relax and remember your way back into alignment with your true self. You can get centered and reconnect with your essence. Now, a sidebar here. You may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experience in 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Instead of waiting for good luck. Good luck is defined as probability taken personally, or narcissism meets chance, my favorite definition. There's a review of research on goal setting in the work pages of your outline. That's from one of the first executive mentor coaches, Goldsmith. what he did was to look at the things that ensure that the things that most commonly get in the way of why people give up on goals. So read them in the inverse as success insurance to help people get to their goals. 10. You're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 simple questions. Which location do you think I should open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added as he left, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500. In his first year, he netted over $1 million. That was after he did. That was the year he went door to door, too. So he had some time left over for the next year. 11. You're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite that story. Cliff Beyond was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this. So he kept shuffling along. He shuffled along for 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And finally, number 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. That's plagiarized, by the way. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the 1960s in this way. This is chaos theory. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity which can be described eventually, this is the key, using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all pieces fit together. So we're in conversation mode now. I know we don't have much time. Any thoughts or clarifications about what we've talked about? Remember, the roadmap is more spelled out in your outline. Look at it as a systematic way to think about listening to the story and perhaps engaging someone to help them deconstruct how they create their story. This is something that's part of mindfulness, part of self-awareness, but to have a system of looking at it rather than just to reflect on it, to look at the elements, I would say the algorithms, that we use that aren't visible, but yet we see ample evidence in the behaviors that we can determine that and determine then, in doing so, what we want to change, because that's at the surface, that's here and now, that's what we do in coaching, now and next, the choice architecture of this moment. we have just a minute or so left. Any comments or questions or reflections? Thank you for the kind words and the responses that each of you have sent. If you have any comments or want to say anything or have a question that you think of as you reflect back on this, fire it off in an email and we'll begin there next time. Our final seminar will be next Monday, same time. So I look forward to that, and we'll have some discussion at the beginning. If you have any questions or observations or just how this whole thing has grabbed you so far. So have a great rest of the week. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Bye then.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.